I'm not really sure. Are we supposed to? Are kids being released at this time? Yeah. Okay. All right. See you there, kiddos. I might need more room this morning, so I'm moving this. Am I on? Yeah. Okay. Good. Can you hear me now? I'm just going to be honest up front. I promise you by some point in this message, you're going to want to tune me out. You're going to want to check out, close down, like put up your walls, your barriers. At some point during this message, it's going to happen. And so I dare you, I double dog dare you to stick with me till the end. All right? With that in mind, let's pray. God, my prayer is simple. May your word be a light for us, a lamp for our feet, that we might walk in the light and not in darkness. Amen. These days in America, in our culture, we make more money and are buying way more stuff than we did even just 30 years ago. That may sound, we just went through a pretty bad recession, right? So that may sound like but the truth is, if you look at average income, I know it hasn't kept up with productivity and all that kind of stuff, and you can look at it any way you want, but if you look at average income, it's gone up over the last 30 years, some. And even if you don't feel like you make more than the average bloke from 30 years ago, you were likely able to buy more stuff than you were, than someone making your income was 30 years ago. Because the cost of things that used to be considered luxuries has come down. I know it's gone slow, and some of us, you know, like we're just so used to the pace of things that we don't really recognize it. But just think back with me for a second. 30 years ago, I was actually alive. Some of you maybe not. But 30 years ago, it took nearly, and sometimes more, depending on your wage, nearly 2 months of above minimum wage labor to buy a VCR. A VCR. Crazy, right? These days, you can have among the very best Blu-rays. I know there's always something better, but you can have among the very best Blu-ray player for maybe a day, maybe two if you really want the best of slightly above minimum wage labor. I know a lot of things, some things have gotten more expensive, but many, many things have come down to the point where, you know, like, I mean, we may focus on gas because we use it all the time. Like, gas has risen. We feel like maybe milk has gone up a dime or two or whatever. But the truth is many, many things are less expensive. And so we are able to buy more and more and more and more because, you know, and we want to and we need to buy more and more and more. And because all of our neighbors have more and more and more, we need to at least have a little bit more than them. Right? Because research says that once you have food in your belly and some form of shelter over your head, your happiness, human beings, the happiness of the average human being is measured by how well you are doing compared to the person next to you. It's sad but true. And so the cheaper that things become, the more we are able to buy, and the more our neighbors buy, the more we need to buy. And so if you're loaded down with credit card debt, if you're stressed to the max by the storage and the maintenance and the upkeep and on of all the stuff that you have bought with those cards, or maybe that's not you, maybe you're more responsible, and so, but maybe you're obsessed with watching how your 401k is doing and seeing if it's possible maybe to retire a year and a half earlier than forecasted. Or, you know, maybe you have a really nice house and that's great, but it's really hard for you to enjoy much because you're so stressed and carry such a workload to feel secure in making that payment month after month after month that it's hard for you to enjoy. And if any of that is true, or even close to true for you, even close, you know what you are? You know what you are? You're normal. You're normal. You're normal. This is not all to make you feel bad. You're normal. You and I, we're normal. And you know what? And there's no one out there. There's no one out there that's going to try to convince you to change a whole heck of a lot, to question normal a whole heck of a lot. Because our economy and most of our jobs, in some way, shape, or form, depend on an economic system that needs you and I to be normal, desperately. Yeah, we'll talk about that later, Gabe. I'd love to. I see that you drink coffee, so we'll get a coffee, Gabe, and we'll talk all about it. I want to try to be honest today. Let's just be brutally honest. Let's put aside the consequences. I know it's hard. Let's put aside the fear that we may have when we talk about this stuff and just be brutally honest about things for just a few minutes. Because if we're brutally honest, if I'm brutally honest, I have to admit, all right, and this is hard for me, I have to admit that capitalism is the best. It's the best. It's the very best economic system, way of making money and having jobs and, you know, paying for things and things like that. It's the best. It's proven that beyond a shadow of a doubt, really. There's no question anymore. No other system that's been tried on the face of this planet has ever come close to producing as much wealth, as widely. Even, I mean, you can talk about all day long about gaps and all that kind of stuff, but the truth is there's nothing out there that has done as well as capitalism, at giving access, at raising standard of living, of making life, you know, access to things that make life a little bit easier, a little bit safer. There's nothing that comes even close. That's the truth, and I have to admit it. It's not easy. But if we're brutally honest, if you and I are being brutally honest this morning, we also have to admit, at some point, we have reached this point, I believe, long ago in our culture and our society, that capitalism can only continue to grow, that can only continue to produce wealth by convincing us that we are unhappy with what we have and need to buy more stuff, even if it won't really, if we don't really need it to make us happy. At some point, our economy only thrives if we feel like we are not thriving. At some point, capitalism, at some point, we have to admit that capitalism is built almost entirely on greed and envy, when you really get down to it. That's the truth, if we are brutally honest. But Jesus had something to say about the matter, and in a very familiar but often completely ignored passage in Matthew 6, starts in verse 19, he says, "Don't store up for yourselves treasures here on earth, where moths eat them and rust destroys." Right? You've heard all this before, but listen to it again with me. Listen to it. Really try. Don't check out. "Don't store up for yourselves treasures here on earth, where moths eat them and rust destroys them, where thieves break in and steal. Store your treasures in heaven, where moths and rust cannot destroy and thieves do not break in and steal. Wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will also be. Your eye is a lamp that provides light for your whole body. When your eye is good, your whole body is filled with light. When your eye is bad, your whole body is filled with darkness. And if the light you think you have is actually darkness, how deep is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. For you will hate one and love the other. You will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." Right now, some part, I know we've come a long way in this in our culture and society, but right now, some part of your car out there is rusting. For me, it's whoever, the trailer hitch, whoever, that's rusting like crazy. There's other spots. Somewhere in your closet, and I never really had, I have one suit that my mom bought me because she wanted me to look presentable in my brother's wedding. And I wore it a couple of times. I got it out, to, you know, because once in a while I officiate a wedding and people, you know, don't like this. And so I got it out and there's holes in it. There's holes in it. It's wool. It's like the only thing that's wool that I own. I'm like, what, moths? Supposed to put those things in bags? I never knew this was even possible. It's actually true. Moths do get in and ruin your stuff. It's absolutely normal in our culture to be consumed with stuff. And it doesn't feel like it because it is normal. Everyone else is the same. We don't feel abnormal. The thing is that we can't be just a little bit consumed. That is what Jesus is saying. I think that's why we try to ignore it so much. We think, it's like it's a matter of degrees. Can I be just 51%, devoted to God and 49% to stuff? It's like, Jesus is like, you cannot serve both. There's a reason, I think, that the first Matrix movie was more popular than the other two. Mostly because it was a better movie. Let's be honest. It was a much better movie. But there's another part to that equation, I think, that makes us, makes me anyways, I'll speak for myself, that makes me want to watch the first one and forget that the other two were ever even made. All right? Because the first Matrix movie has something true to say. There's something that strikes a chord with us in that story. Now, I'm pretty sure that none of us actually think we're actually living in a tank of goo plugged into a power generator. Pretty sure. How would we know? But to some extent, we very well might as be. We might well as be, right? I mean, our economy doesn't work unless we are all plugged into the system and doing our part to power the growth of our economy. There's something very true, metaphorically, about that image of human beings being plugged in and used for their power-generating capacity. That's what's normal. And you only have to look at the growth of the average closet space given over in the plans of new homes over the decades. That has grown exponentially. I live in an old house and I redid it and it was like scrambling trying to get closet space. You walk into a new house in Parade of Homes and I think most master bedroom walk-in closets are bigger than the room my daughters share. I mean, that's just the way it is. Because we have more and more and more stuff. Bonus rooms over garages. They're all standard parts of how we build houses, our dwellings these days, because we have more and more stuff. Or look at the growth of the self-storage industry that didn't exist 5 decades ago. And now, every man, woman, and child in our country could have over 6 square feet of space under a sheet metal roof. Or look at the growth of the average credit card debt. It goes on and on and on. To see what is normal in our culture, it's easy to see. We all stare down, every day, we all stare down, to some extent, hopeless addiction to money or stuff or possessions every single day. We are in danger of being consumed by it, by the wrong thing every single day. Now, I've been pushing. Let me just stop and say, hear me right now. Hear me. Listen carefully. I am not trying to say that you can't have nice things in this series. What I am trying to say is they can't have you. They can't have you. Jesus wants us to be free. Paul says that it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. That sounds redundant, right? Sounds redundant. Yet so many of us, after having accepted the gift of grace that is life in Jesus Christ, we go straight back to a life of bondage to things. It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. And living in our culture, we are all in constant danger of being hopelessly addicted, of having an IV of consumerism just stuck straight into our vein, just mainlining that stuff. Yes, I did. How do we get the needle out? That's the question. How do we get it out? How do we get free? Jesus was always really clear on this point. Very clear. Over and over again. You just simply do the opposite of what is normal. Whatever is normal, you do the opposite to get free. Right? Over and over again. You want to really find your life? Lose it. Those who want to live have to pick up their cross and die. You've heard it said, love your neighbor, hate your enemy. But I say, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. That's how you actually get free from bitterness and unforgiveness. You do the opposite of normal. You want to truly get rich? Give away all your material wealth. That's what Jesus says. That's how you get free. Whatever's normal, you do the opposite. Now, some of those are just stories, but some of those, I mean, like, that's how we dismiss. Those are the words of Jesus. That's the instructions. You see, that's how we get free. Now, I know you know, and I know what's coming, where I'm going next here, right? And we avoid it like it's the plague or something here at the Branch. And so, you know, for those, joining us today, hey, you get like the one time a year that we've ever talked about money. See, I've heard tithing. I've heard that referred to as the Christian tax. You ever heard that? Yeah. Or the price of admission to the show. I've heard that. Hate that one. And whatever. If that's how you think about it, or if that's like, you know, like, fine, that's really on us, really. Because, you know, like, we've been so afraid to talk about this stuff often that we just outright ignore it here at the Branch. But the truth is that the act of tithing isn't a tax, it's detox. It's detox. It's how we yank the needle out of our arm. And I know this is hard to talk about. I know it. I know some of you desperately, you're trying to tune me out right now because you can't believe that we're talking about money in church right now. It's everything I hate about church, right? You might be getting angry with me. You might be attempting to find a way. You might know something about me because I'm imperfect for sure. We all know that, right? And so you might be trying to find a way to personally judge me, to invalidate my message and all of that. But I just want to tell you to stop it. Just stop. Stop it. I'm trying to help you get free. If one of your friends was sitting there next to you on the couch, needle hanging out of their arm, would you just be like, no. Trying to help you get free. And myself along with you. Giving away our financial capital makes no sense to what the world says is normal. It makes no sense. But that's why it's detox. It's yanking the needle out. And I really, really do know this is hard. I made a little funnies here and there or whatever, but I know that most of us, the truth is, most of us would rather sit around in a room with strangers talking about a lot of other stuff. A lot of other stuff. According to statistics, most of us would rather talk about our sex lives than, or past criminal activity, or whatever. People would rather find just about anything to talk about and answer questions about than money. And I think there's Jesus said the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Right, we often get that wrong, that money is evil, but it's the love of money that is the root of all kinds of evil. And Jesus said that because it wreaks all kinds of havoc in our lives, in our relationships. You know this, right? It's the number one cause of divorce in our culture. The number one cause. And we can't even bring ourselves to talk about it. And there's a very, very good reason why. Because our economy is based on one form of capital. We call it capitalism, but it's really selective capitalism, right? Jesus talked about five distinct kinds of capital. And we'll be here a lot longer than we have time for if I dig them all out for you. So you'll just have to go and find it yourself. I promise you, Jesus talked about this. All right? You can email me if you prove that you were listening, and I'll send you the text. But there's at least five in order of importance. In financial, which our system is built on, is the lowest. It's the lowest form of capital. Least valuable. Easiest to get. It may not feel like it, but if you absolutely needed to and you didn't care about any other form of capital or anything else in your life, you could find a job. You could find something to do to get some financial capital. Or you could go steal it from someone, I guess. The next that I would put up here is physical. We all have some physical capital to steward, right? And the next I would put intellectual. Sorry. I should just write things in advance instead of having to spell them on the fly. All right? And then relational. And these, you could flip-flop, you can make an argument. Maybe physical is more important than intellectual because you can't use it. I mean, I don't know. I put them in different ways. Financial, definitely the bottom. Physical, intellectual. We can trade financial and physical to get intellectual, or you can put physical up front. There's some people smiling because they know that this is actually their preferred way of putting it, I think, right? I did it just for you, Chris. Relational. We all know how important relationships are, and yet we still, in our culture, because we're supposed to, we prioritize this capital. And I would say there's spiritual capital as well. And that's the most important, the hardest to get, the most valuable. The thing is I think that the evil one has done a very good job of keeping our focus right here. All here. We're all in bondage, worrying about the lowest form of capital to the exclusion of the other four. And as long as we are busy worrying about who has more of this and hoarding more of this, the further we are from gaining spiritual capital in this world and with our Creator. We need a way to detox from our addiction to being consumed with financial capital, because it will recalibrate our sense of what we actually need and what is actually valuable in this world. And all of a sudden, if we do that, we will start to see the value of these other capitals, these other forms of value in our life. And ultimately, we will have greater access to the most valuable capital of all. But for it to truly be detoxed, we have to give up control. We have to surrender control. Oftentimes, we try to be generous, pick and choose where we give some or make a blessing or things like that, because we can still have control. And that's just not good enough. We have to be the part of the point of tithing, and why Jesus, I think, upholds it, even though it's like sort of a part of the old system, is because it makes us give up control of what is done with the financial capital we're stewarded with. That's what makes it detox. That's what gets us free. Do you want to be free from the stuff, from the love of money? Do what is opposite of normal. It makes absolutely no sense to give away your financial capital, or really any for that matter, but that's how we get free. Try it and see. This is the only thing, pretty much the only thing in the entire Bible. It's a very thick book full of lots of, but this is pretty much the only thing where God says, test me and see. Try it and see. God gives you permission to test and see. Try it and see if I don't open up the floodgates of blessing in your life. You know what this looks like? bring this all back down to like a human level. You know what this looks like? This looks like a guy named Paul Navone. You may not have heard of him. The story is several years old now, but I remember, you know, this story coming out in the national papers, and it was really fascinating. Paul Navone was just an average guy who grew up, you know, who lived and died in a nondescript area of New Jersey. Nothing special, right? His name, you know, again, Paul Navone. You could Google it later. Paul Navone made the papers nationally, made national stories by giving $2 million away. $1 million to two different schools. Now, it wasn't, I mean, people give more than that away all the time, really. Maybe not all the time, but a lot, you know, like more than that. It wasn't the amount of the gifts that really made it special or newsworthy necessarily. It was the fact that Paul Navone had never made more than $11 an hour in his entire life. Entire life. He was like 78 when he gave him money away. He'd made never made more than $11 his whole life. Now, you know, there's ways that he did this, but at the end of the day, you know what he said? That there's two things basically that he wanted to tell people about the way he lived his life. There's lots of others if you dig into it, but the two things he wanted to say, he's like, I've never bought new clothes his whole life. Never bought new clothes. Now, I don't say that because I think like you should never go buy new clothes. That's not it necessarily. But I say that and I bring this story up because I think we need to hear that something might have to give. Something might have to change for you to live life free from addiction, from this addiction, to being consumed by this. Something might have to change. Right? You might have to buy a used car. You might even make, I know someone right there who doesn't buy new clothes. I know, you're like, something in your life might have to change. Something might have to give. The other thing he said is, I never bought a TV. Now, I don't think he was miraculously able to save, you know, he still had $1 million to live his retirement on, you know, so I don't think he was miraculously able to save $3 million just because he saved like $800 every 5 years or whatever on a TV. I don't think that's it. But I do think television is the major way our culture pushes the drug, pushes the addiction, right? He eliminated the pusher. Now these days, I mean, it's easy for me to stand up here and say, hey, I don't have a TV either, you know? Like, but I'm on Facebook, Instagram. I do have a Pinterest account, although I've never used it. Whatever it is, it doesn't, I mean, like for you, you might have to get radical about eliminating the pusher. See what I'm saying? Are you free? Are you free? In God's kingdom, we are meant to be free. Not just rescued, not just saved, but to live a life of freedom. And every time you eliminate attachment, addiction, consumption, worry, stress, connected with things, connected with money, the more of yourself, of your heart, can be given over to what truly makes us happy. You know it, and I know it. And the fact that we hardly ever talk about it here leaves us that much more susceptible to addiction out there, right? Instead of an economy based on greed and dissatisfaction, God's economy is meant to be based on radical sharing, of releasing control of the resources that God gives us to steward. And again, this is not about telling you that you can't have nice things. They don't get to have you. Jesus paid a price. And you don't get to trade it away for whatever. The nice, shiny object they're advertising on TV. They don't get to have you. It would be really easy for me to stand up here and say, you know, like use myself as an example. I've never had much of this. So it's easy kind of, you know, to say, I'm not addicted to this. I've been left with very little of this because I've made job choices, things like that. I've never, you know, like pretty much in 17 years of marriage this week, we've never made a decision or a job or a move based on this. It's always been based on this. And that's had some consequences in our life. But you know what I am a hoarder of, have been guilty of being an addict of? Relational capital. God has, for whatever reason, has seen fit to entrust me with relational capital that is above average, I would say. There's favor and grace for Andy Drott, usually, out in the world, in our community. I know and have favor with a lot of people. And man, do I like it. I'm telling you, I have loved that. I've been addicted to that. I have wrapped my arm and kept it away from you at times. My capital. I've hoarded it. Not released it. And I think I've kept, you know, I've used it maybe sometimes for spiritual capital in my own life, but kept, you know, like kept it away from blessing others. Using it to increase spiritual capital or other capital for other people that God may want me to release some of what he's given me to steward with. And this is hard. It's hard for me. Recently, our missional community that meets in our house, we decided to shift it more towards trying to give ourselves in relationship to an organization called Well House. An organization with an executive director who's been my friend for a long time. She's not a Christian. She owns bars around. Like, and I'm proud of the fact that I have favor with Tammy. And everything in me wants to maintain control of that relationship, of the relationship between our community and Well House, because that puts me at the center, makes me important, makes me feel good about the fact that I'm dirt poor. But I know that about myself, and I want to be free. I want to be free. And so I typed an email. I said, I'm going to meet Tammy. We're going to talk about Well House. Anyone else want to come? Secretly hoping no one would. Chris said she'd come. I was like, okay. All right, God, I'll give it away. And then Dave Ruka said he'd come. I'm like, come on. Long story short is I have tried to completely remove myself from that. And I'm sure Chris and Dave feel like I just abandoned them. Like, ah. But I'm telling you, that's why I do it. I need to be free. I need to give away. I need to practice. I need to yank the needle out of my arm and be free from the addiction to hoarding whatever capital God gives me. It might not be money for you. That would just make you normal. Are you free? This is not one of those messages or sermons where it gets wrapped up into a neat little, here, go and do this. We've got more to talk about. 3 weeks ago, Chris just introduced this idea of being of helping us to kind of like baby steps into, are we consumed by the idea of more, you know? And then last week, Drew was like, I was really like, it found it very helpful to think about closing my day, about thinking about blessings instead, and like in trying to use that as a baby steps out of being consumed by the bondage of debt. And this week, it's like dropping the hammer. But we've got more journey to walk in this series. The one thing I want you to do today, just one. I've been talking about this like an addiction, so we'll learn from the 12 steps. The first step is just admitting that we have a problem. Just admitting that we have a problem. speaking up about it. So I just went first. For me, I'm a hoarder of relational capital. Hi, I'm Andy. And I'm addicted to being seen as important to other people. The one thing I want you to do is to figure out, like, where is it? Where are you most likely to want to stick the needle in? Where are you most likely to want to grab on control of what God has given you to steward? Submit that there's somewhere in your life that you're not free yet. And maybe tell somebody. Maybe tell somebody you trust. That's it. Because if you do that, then the next couple of weeks that we talk about this stuff, we'll be able to make some progress. But we can't do that if we put our heads in the sand and just pretend like we're free. And not admit that there are areas of our life where we're not free yet. Can you do that with me? All right, let's pray. God, at this moment, my prayer is simple but hard. I simply ask that you would invade our lives in this way. Interrupt our normal patterns of thinking. Somehow get past our barriers that we put up to keeping things the way they are. That we might admit that there's an area of our life that's not free, that's not redeemed, that's not where we're not living in freedom. Doesn't seem very complex, but we know that it's not easy. And so we ask you, who is powerful and faithful and good, to do it for us, to do what we can't do through normal human effort. Break into our lives today, Jesus. Amen.